CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, the elf on the shelf stroke Father Christmas or whatever the hell this guy is. He's like back on the microphone. So you can tell there's a Christmas thing happening here already.
I
think Jane is putting up our Christmas decorations this week. So, you know, it's all happening.
Like you said, I'm a Grinch. We'll see it.
Yeah, you're not so into this, huh?
Santa Claus. No. But like Gareth, Santa hurt me first. I never got a present from Santa. There's no Santa Claus where I come from. There's Santa Claus in the Eastern Cape.
Oh, there's nothing in the Eastern Cape. Santa Claus is the least of your worries. How about running water and electricity? How about jobs? That would be nice.
Yeah, that's what we should get for Christmas. I want for Christmas is a great economy.
All I want for Christmas is a province that fucking works. Yeah. The Eastern Cape. People there crying. I want something for Christmas, please. Father Christmas, please. Father Christmas is like, I'm not taking my reindeer near there. It's dangerous for them.
I'm going to hijack him.
Like, if I bring my sleigh into the Eastern Cape, they're gonna steal all my stuff.
Right. The potholes are so bad in the Eastern Cape, you can't even fly Santa's sleigh.
Can you imagine? Yeah, exactly. The potholes will get you even when you're in the air. It's ridiculous. All right. So we are here. It is Tuesday, the 5th of December. And things are definitely happening. I see there's all the world's biggest bullshit artists are gathered at COP28 in Dubai. And what I love is that you've got all these people from Western democracies. It's like all these left-wingers and these climate activists and these women, and they're all getting together and they're all talking about, we're going to have to change the global emissions and we have to get off fossil fuels. And what happens? The president of COP28, Sultan Al-Jaber, says, there's no science indicating the phase out of fossil fuels is needed to restrict global heating to 1.5 degrees. He said, if you carry on like this, we'll all end up back in caves.
Yes.
And he's right.
Yeah, that is true.
So I like the way that the president of COP28 just basically told the rest of them that they're a bunch of morons.
I've never understood this
I've
never understood this whole woke mentality, but that's a different thing, Gareth.
What mentality?
Like the woke mentality. Like I want to save the world. The world was here before you. It'll be here after you.
I'll explain it to you. You want me to try and get into the head of woke people this first thing in the morning?
Please.
Blow my nose so I can get ready for this. I have to get rid of my carbon emissions before I can start talking shit. There we go.
Exactly.
All right, so what happens is, if you have what like Fikile Mbalula has, which is struggle envy, you want to stand for something. You want to make a mark. You want to be living a life of meaning and purpose, but you don't really have any skills to do anything useful on planet Earth. You're basically a coddled first world politician who's spoiled rotten. Nobody takes you seriously. You've never really had a struggle in your life. You're living off other people's money, you know, whether you're Fikile or one of these people at COP28.
Yep.
So what you do is you set up a goal which is unattainable so that you can't really be measured. Because if you have a goal that's attainable, let's say your goal is we have to close down 20% of the power plants by 2030. Then you know how many power plants there are across the world. You know which ones you're going to close down. You start earmarking them now. You start saying we're going to replace that with this, this, and this. But you have like a proper plan. And plans do not include like windmills and solar panels, because you need so many solar panels and windmills to replace one coal-powered power plant.
Exactly.
That you'd cover an area the size of Lesotho. All right, and that's to replace the not even the half of them.
Mm.
Anyway, they don't have a plan because all of this is completely ridiculous. You can't lower the temperature of the Earth as a human being or even as a group of human beings, yes. Even as a consortium of nations. Plus, the weird thing about the woke and the left in this case is that they're all anti-colonialism and anti-imperialism until it comes to cramming down their priorities on the rest of the world, especially the poor part of the world. So they go to countries like South Africa and Indonesia, for example, because apparently we've reneged. So we took $23 billion. We took $23 billion, or our share of it, And then we didn't do what we said we were going to do.
Right on an international level. Welcome, world.
Our government is so fucking bad that they will take money and go, yeah, we promise we'll do that. And we just ignore whatever the reasons were that we were given the money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hilarious because actually this is money that they shouldn't have given us in the first place. Because what they're doing is giving us money to keep doing what we were doing before.
Yes.
And it's not working. Plus, I mean, South Africa's carbon emissions are so low at the moment because our power stations don't even run, right? So we don't make electricity. So we're actually probably one of the least offensive countries when it comes to this stuff. But when you set up unattainable goals, like saying, for example, oh, the world's getting hotter, what are we going to do? You're not going to do anything, because the funny thing about COP28, and I'd love to actually talk to one of these nutcase environmentalists, but I want to talk to them with facts, because I'm not even that well versed in this stuff, but I can see that there's a volcano in Indonesia that's just exploded, Sumatra somewhere. This thing is pushing out millions of cubic tons of CO2, methane, sulfur dioxide, and a number of gases which are absolutely positively detrimental to the greenhouse effects of the atmosphere. But at a scale and in a way that is just, it makes all the cars and all the cows and all the other things that humans are being blamed for, you know, our carbon emissions are too high, all our power plants and all our factories. Listen, let me tell you, this volcano has probably dwarfed all of our contribution to global warming. In the next 10 years, we won't get close to the amount of shit that this volcano has just pushed out into the atmosphere. And that's not humans, that's the Earth doing what Earth does. But the counter argument will be, we caused that.
That's climate change.
We caused a volcano. Show me how. Show me how we actually affect the tectonic shifts within the Earth's crust, which we're
drilling for all that oil you guys love.
They're not doing that in Indonesia. And please believe me that a little drill, that's like putting a toothpick in a cake and saying that you're busy upsetting the balance of the cake. Okay. I mean, it's just absolutely unfathomably stupid. But I do love the fact that they take on, and this is kind of the mentality of a lot of people these days, is they find some unattainable goal or some nonsense that they can't actually be measured on. Because God forbid you should actually be measured. Like, okay, here's a goal. Take this state-owned enterprise and run it profitably.
Well, just break even.
Just break even. Right. That would be enough. Here's a house. Try not to let it fall apart.
Yes.
Here's a car. Try not to let it run out of fuel. Those goals are way too difficult for people who talk shit for a living. So they go to places like COP28 and they all sit there. And I saw Cyril over the weekend. Some idiot journalist asked him, Mr. President, are you happy with what's happening at COP28? Like, first of all, what a lame-ass question.
Exactly, because I judge the journalist in this
case.
Are
you happy? I mean, what kind of a way is that to ask a serious question at a conference? Second of all, of course he's happy, because he's sitting there talking shit. He doesn't have to be accountable. He's already been fingered for taking the money and not doing anything with it that he was expected to do. And we know these politicians are getting together, sitting around, talking shit, and then smacking each other on the back afterwards as if they've done something. And they haven't. They've done nothing. Pope Francis sent his envoy, the Vatican Secretary of State, who's busy saying, well, we need an eco-conversion. We need to convert people ecologically like we've converted their souls as the Catholic Church. You got a lot of problems in that Catholic Church, Pope Francis. Chief among them is pedophile priests. Why don't you start with that instead of telling the rest of us to stop using electricity or to slow down our economies so that we all become poorer? Who do you think you are, living off all that Vatican money, which has been either stolen or donated to you by true believers who have no interest in your climate change agenda? Who are these people? Anyway, we know why they're doing it. It's the same way as, you know, they'll be activists for some stupid cause that nobody cares about. Like, You know, the bring back our girls, which nothing ever happened. Yes. Everybody gets online and they're all like, bring back our girls. They're all holding up Michelle Obama with a sad face, holding up a bring back our girls sign. Where are the girls? Still nowhere to be found. And probably dead. Probably already been indoctrinated and or raped and or pulled into the mess that is Boko Haram. But you don't hear any more about that, you know? So it's just, it's all these slacktivists. It's these people who, like, I'm all for Palestine. And you're like, well, where were you when Yemen was happening? Where were you when the Kurds were being eradicated by Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons?
Exactly.
Where were you? No. You didn't have anything to say. I can't take these people seriously.
In recent history, China and the Uyghurs.
It's still going on.
Yes.
Right? So if you're so interested in, like, Muslim solidarity, what are you saying about the Uyghurs?
Yep.
Why aren't you when Xi Jinping comes here, as he did not so long ago, where were all the people who were protesting outside the US embassy or the Israeli embassy when Xi Jinping came here? Where were they then? Oh, no, you know what they were doing? They were shutting up and sitting down like good slaves because they didn't have the balls to stand up to an actual genocidal maniac. Much easier to make a noise about nothing and claim the credit.
Yes.
Please. It's just so unbelievable. Jesus was the original Klaus Schwab, says Congo Christmas. I love Congo Christmas. That's what he's come up with. Blessed are the meek is just biblical. You will own nothing and be happy. Well, you know, socialists claim that. But I think, and I'm no expert on the gospels or the spiritual text, but I will say that there's this idea that's come about in the last 100 years, that Jesus was this hippie.
Yes.
Who walked around in tie-dyed cloth and smoked weed and chilled, and everybody was his friend, and like, love one another, man. Like, let's all get along.
Peace and love.
And they conveniently forget that he was actually a badass, at least some of the time. He turned over those moneylenders' tables in the temple and smashed them with like whips and shit. I mean, he was properly angry.
Mm.
And, you know, he certainly didn't mince his words about sinners.
Yeah, he didn't.
He was not this love everybody hippie. It seems like that's the, you know, Christianity's become so soft too. I had this really interesting interview with a guy yesterday who you'll get to hear probably next week. He's a Muslim, well, an ex-Muslim now, who has some very interesting things to say about the comparisons between Christianity and Islam. And, you know, you can criticize Islam, but at least Muslims know what their religion stands for. They know what's unacceptable in Islam. And there are a lot of things that are unacceptable in Islam. Christianity's become like this kind of broad church, if you'll pardon the pun, where everything's okay. You can do this. You can do that. Everything's acceptable. You be you, boo. And it's just bizarre, right? It's like, okay, well then, if you stand for nothing, then you fall for everything. Yes. And why are we worried about this? It's not a religion. It's just like a get-together for people on a Sunday. It's like a social club.
But the minute you broaden the umbrella, the more you lose its core, Gareth.
Well, there we go. Yeah, you don't know what your actual principles are. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, at least, you know, if you leave Islam, you know punishment is death.
Yes.
You know, apostasy. You know, the punishment, the prescribed punishment, there's no Muslim is going to argue with this. They're going to say, yeah, that's it. So if you leave Islam, you must be killed.
Mm.
That's what they say. Christianity is like, well, you must just express yourself and then you can find a charismatic church or you can find a reform church or there's some kind of church for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's like Jesus is like, oh, whatever, anything goes. Which is not
true, because there's an actual book that tells you what goes.
Yeah, and Christianity not so long ago was busy like slaughtering people for not following the word.
Yes.
Precisely. You know, the Inquisition, all of that stuff. Yeah, it wasn't exactly all hippie and sandal wearing and fantastic. Yeah. So let's be honest about that. But what do you think of COP 28? It's a cop out, right?
I genuinely don't understand this nonsense, because imagine all these dignitaries going and talking about a problem that doesn't actually exist, especially for Cyril to leave actual problems in South Africa and go debate something that we don't have a problem
with. It's so hilarious. Like, the ANC cannot pay.
Exactly.
The sheriff of the court arrived yesterday at Luthuli House and started telling them he was going to attach furniture.
Yes.
Like, they have so little money. Luthuli House is so much in debt. You know that the guys who own the building want to chuck them out.
Yes.
Now, guards have locked the gates, defying the law. But Fikile Mbalula's in Algeria.
Yes.
Making friends with some bullshit guy we've never heard
tweeting
of.
Tweeting up a storm, right? Meanwhile, his house is burning and he doesn't even care about it. I don't understand this.
Teletubby.
Imagine Gareth to be, okay, cool. So besides the fact that they broke the law by locking the gates and not allowing the sheriff of the court in, thus again proving that they are above the law, or at least they think so. These people can't even afford to pay their bills. How can we trust them to run a country?
Mm.
Three judges said, you guys lost this case. You guys should repay.
Yep.
They haven't done it. They are defying the law. This is not Zuma must pay back the money. This is not a people campaign. This is the actual law telling them to do something, and they're just like, nah.
They must lock someone up. And the chief person to lock up here is the Secretary General. You know, or the Treasurer General at very least. Put them in jail.
Yes.
It's not acceptable that, you know, and I mean, remember, this is supposedly the party with a better life for all. Meanwhile, their own workers, the tea lady, the cleaner,
are not getting paid.
They're not getting paid, haven't been paid for months.
Exactly. Imagine what charity begins at home. Imagine how you treat your people.
Well, come that's on. Exactly right.
It's so funny that you bring up Figgy Lake, Gareth.
Oh, he's such a jerk.
I was talking to my friend. He calls me. He's angry. It's like 5 a.m. in the morning. He's like, I don't understand why Figgy Lembalula can make decisions for me. Meanwhile, he can't do anything else.
No, he can't. But what, like, does he mean?
If he was no longer a politician tomorrow, what would he do? He has no skill set. Yes. He'll be unemployed
there's
and
nothing.
A bum.
There's nothing. Like, Fikile Mbalula could not make himself useful in a marketplace.
So then over all the engineers, ideas, all the town jobs, planners, all services, the transport people in this country, we choose that guy. We're like, oh yeah, he'll tell them what to do.
No.
It's the blind
leading. And remember,
the blind.
He's fucked up everything he's touched.
Yes.
Remember, he was police minister for a little bit, then he was minister of sport for a little bit, then he was minister of transport for a little bit. And not in any one of them did he improve anything.
Thank you.
Nothing like got better. Again, you know, it's like going to COP 28 and saying, oh, we're going to fix the climate. We're going to do.
Then we come back, a couple of years later, we find out the world got warmer because that's what the
goals.
World does.
But with Figile, those are attainable goals. Those are things that other people in those positions all over the world have managed to improve. Public transport infrastructure.
You don't even need to create anything here. You just copy something that works.
Right. No, he's done nothing better. In other words, everywhere he goes, he makes things shittier.
And he gets
better.
A new job for as a reward.
But so the best job for him is the Secretary General job, because none of us care about the ANC, so let him fuck that up, right?
Yep.
Let him. I'm not going to complain if he screws up the ANC. It's probably the best place for him. He can't do any more damage. They're already a disaster zone. It's like going into Afghanistan and saying you're going to bomb it. Well,
it's like you're going to demolish a building.
What are you going to do? Right?
Nothing you can do about it. Going to Afghanistan and bombing a building.
Anyway, no. I mean, we're not going to solve all the problems, but at least we can point them out.
We can make you angry this morning.
Yeah, we can point them out.
Yeah.
105 million in debt to a service provider, even more in debt to their own employees. The burnt-out husk of our parliament building is an embodiment of what South Africa has become under the ANC. Yeah, exactly. I think that is a very good metaphor. Mm. If you look at the parliament building, which they still can't go and sit in, they're still sitting in the Cape Town City Hall.
Yeah.
Cape Town City, thank God, is run by the DA, so they still have buildings where one brick is on top of another. But the parliament has to ask the city of Cape Town if they can use their city hall, because our parliament itself is a clusterfuck.
Yeah, because we can't go fix it.
Well, because nobody is taking responsibility for anything. And by the way, Figile, you remember that stupid outfit? Ryan, please put up that picture of him with the Teletubbies, that outfit he was wearing at the Rugby World Cup final. I mean,
that yellow monstrosity.
What a stupid man-child. I mean, I wouldn't, and I don't have any fashion sense, but I wouldn't be caught dead in an outfit like that. If you gave it to me, I would say, look, this is too ridiculous.
Exactly. It looks like a costume.
Anyway, look at this. Speaking of ridiculous, let's change the subject for a second because I don't want to talk about politicians all morning. But look at this idiot. Here's Sam Smith at some fashion thing. What I want you to pay attention to here is not the outfit, which is stupid enough, because Sam Smith, don't even look at him because he's also ridiculous. He's just like, he doesn't even, this guy used to be a rising star in the world. He still is a talented musician, but with all of this gender non-binary nonsense, he dresses like a complete fool, like Fikile Mbalula. But he also, he's fat.
Yes.
He's out of shape. He looks terrible. You can actually visibly see the signs of decline. It's like he wants to be as ugly and as bad as he could possibly be. He's like testing, well, these idiots in the public will accept me no matter what. Just watch this video. Look at this quick. So you can see him here. He's, if you aren't watching, he's wearing like a skirt, a black jacket, the most outrageous heels. They're like, and he can't even walk on them. He looks like a clumsy giraffe trying to walk in them. And underneath the comment is, let me take this comment quickly because I need to actually read it. It says, Sam Smith's look at the Fashion Awards is to die for.
Wow.
This is according to E! News in America. How can they carry on lying to us and expect us to just believe it? Like, this is, you know, this is like me going up to you and saying, sure, but it's so cold outside on one of the hottest days in the year. And you
with a straight face.
And you must go, yeah.
But Gareth, you need to understand that you feel like it's cold, right? So I can't question your feelings. It's your truth.
Your truth.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think Sam Smith looks like
shit. You identify
shit.
As warm or
I
cold
think he,
today.
I think he looks like shit, and yes. I think he dresses very badly, and I think his days are numbered. You can only get so far in talent, and his has run out. So you don't have to believe me. You can always believe E! News saying, his look is to die for.
To die for.
Like, who, on which group of people is sitting there going, wow, that's a great outfit? Besides the crappiest people at these publications in the news media who are trying to convince us of, like, the earth is flat.
Yes.
That's the only people who believe that. No one with a brain is listening to that going, yeah, that's true. And they actually think, like, someone in that office is going, oh, we've got, isn't this just great? We've got to celebrate. Do you think they actually know that they are full of shit? Or do you think really believe that that's
I
great?
I think they believe in their own shit. I think that, have you seen Bob Iger speak about how Disney is a flop and he refuses to accept any mistakes because they chose an entire culture war.
By the way, like, Wish, the latest movie which came out.
Bombed.
Oh, my. Bombed so badly.
Budget of $200 million. Wish.
Marvel's bombed so badly.
Yes.
Basically, Disney's dropping so many bombs at the moment, they're going to be roped into the Ukraine war.
The third superpower.
Can you imagine? Lockheed Martin saying, please, can we sign you guys up? You seem to be doing better bombs than we do.
But yeah, like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Oh, go woke, go broke.
Here's the picture of Fikile with the Teletubbies. I mean, so you got, I don't even remember. Do you remember their names?
What? Poe, that's the purple one.
Right.
Tinky Winky.
Tinky Winky.
La La.
La La. And?
Figgy.
And Figgy Lee. Look at him. What an idiot. This is the man who is in charge of this, like, extremely stupid, crazy messed up situation at Lituli House.
Yes.
He's the guy. I hope that when that cleaner or that tea lady or whoever it is that arrives there and hasn't been paid for months, I hope when she gets in, she sees this picture on the wall and goes, so that's the guy who's not paying me.
That's my boss.
Yeah. I mean, what an outfit that is. Can you even describe that? That makes Sam Smith look good.
I have told you this before. It is uncanny how much he looks like Mushe from Takalani Sesame. he looks like a character from Sesame Street.
Man.
That All says right. enough.
Let's take a look at some of the news stories. We've got to get to JJ Cornish just now with African Analysis, which is always one of my favorite things about a Tuesday. But first, let's take a look at some news. NUMSA has welcomed a judgment declaring load shedding unconstitutional. Well, it's fine if court declares it unconstitutional, but that doesn't mean that they're suddenly going to switch everything on and we're not going to have problems. So the National Union of Metal Workers, who are obviously really dense, they think this is going to mean boop, everything comes on.
Yes.
You know, again, this is a union. What they should be doing is fighting for wages against the employers in the mine and metalworking industry. But they've become, because in this country, like, idiocy seems to be promoted beyond its competence. And all you have to do in South Africa is fail forward.
Yes.
Right?
True.
Which is like Fikile, we were talking about him just now. You fail at being Minister of Police.
Just keep getting a better job.
Then they pass you on to sport. You fail at that, then they put you into transport because it's got sport in it, so no one's really going to notice. This is honestly what I think they think.
Yeah, this is the best. Well,
just keep moving him. And then, like, now he's even messing with transport. And, like, Bekele is probably saying, I own taxis and he's making it difficult for me. Get rid of him. Then they put him in the Thule House as the Secretary General. And they send him to nonsense places like Algeria. When, I mean, I don't know how much trade goes on between South Africa and Algeria, but I'd be surprised if it's more than the amount of trade that happens on a Sunday at China Mall.
Yes.
Okay? But Fikile's there, like he's being a big deal and he's meeting with the leaders of Algeria. And not even the leaders, by the way. They're like the third tier.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the Algerians are like, we don't need to send our best people for this moron.
You won't even notice.
Let's give this clown something to keep him busy and then he'll go back to South Africa. Because now he's on this huge mission. Apparently he wants to rename Sandton Drive.
Yeah,
after some Palestinian activist.
Yeah,
because now
he signed the petition and then he was there at Constitutional Hill.
Here's what's happened. So he gets all this attention now for his pro-Palestinian stance, which, by the way, I mean, it's not hard to get attention for your pro-Palestinian stance in South Africa because there's a whole group of people who are just brought to life. These are people who have been dead on Twitter for most of the last 20 years.
Suddenly they have opinions.
You mentioned Palestine and they just really wake up like the walking dead. And so Fikile is seeing this as an opportunity for fame because that's all he wants, right? That's all he wants. He's got money, ill-gotten gains and all that stuff. I mean, he lives here in Sandton. He sends his kids to private schools. He's wearing outfits that cost more than your car. They look stupid, but they cost more than your car. But he really wants fame. Mm. So now when every time he mentions from the river to the sea, someone pays attention to him.
Yeah.
And he just wants attention because obviously he didn't get enough hugs from his daddy when he was little. I don't even know if his daddy was around when he was little. That's part of the problem. But it's interesting that this is his thing now. So he hears about some woman in Palestine who's like an activist who was killed. Now he reckons we must name Sandton Drive after her. It's like they've got so few ideas. You remember the EFF were the ones who suggested who they change
Winnie Madig.
Right, like William Nicol into Winnie Madik as Zelma Mandela. And I think the ANC were like, we should have thought of that. Now Fikile, who doesn't have an original bright idea in his entire...
Scrolling through Twitter, sees a tweet.
You could go through all the things Fikile knows. It'll take you 15 minutes. So he grabs one of these like tired ideas that the EFF came up with. Oh, they named that street after Winnie and it got some attention for them. All I want's attention. Maybe we should just name something after, a Palestinian like activist, because then all those people will be cheering me on.
Yes.
That's all I want. It's just, I need the love that I didn't get as a child.
This man is a spotlight hog. Gareth. So when he was sports minister, I don't know, was it 2014? You know, he hired out Vivica A. Fox.
Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah, and then he just brought them to South Africa to the sports award for no particular reason.
No, except that he wanted to be seen with them.
Yes.
That he at that point, and who knows how the finances of the Thule House are run. I mean, you know, people used to disparagingly say like a spaza shop, but I do not know a spaza shop that doesn't pay its people because a spaza shop has to operate on market principles. Otherwise, they go out of business. So you can't say that someone like Fikile runs it like a spaza shop because he should wish that he could run it like a spaza shop. If you gave him a spaza shop, he'd screw that up. Right, he'd bankrupt it. Problem is that when their coffers are empty, they find nefarious ways to dip into taxpayer money. Yeah, I don't dispute that. I think that's probably about right. He looks like an Ali G lookalike. That's also a good point. Carl says there must be a new portfolio for Fikile so he can be Minister of Pussery. Yeah. Congo Chris says, I remember in the 90s we were taught that access to electricity was a constitutional human right. Yeah. We should take Eskom to the Concord and demand the dissolving of the apartheid era monopoly. Well, this is what they've done. So basically, there's this landmark judgment declaring load shedding is a basic breach in rights and ordering the electricity minister to take all reasonable steps to ensure critical state services aren't affected by it. But, you know, when the economy is falling apart, when we can't run the country because electricity can't be provided, which is the case already,
yeah.
You don't need a court to then tell them, well, you've got to take all reasonable steps. You think that's going to change the minds of people who've already decided they don't care about the average South African or electricity provision? I mean, come on. Who are these people who think, oh, no, because the court said so, now that's going to get government's arse in gear. Now you're going to see José Enzo Ramajopa suddenly, oh, well, I better get going. The court told me to.
The court told me to.
So let me sort that out anyway. Comes in the back of a case brought by various groups from organized labor and civil society, as well as a number of political parties, with NUMSA as one of the applicants. So they obviously think that this is a big victory. But the reality is the court can't make José Enzo Ramajopa, or Cyril Ramaphosa, or Gwede Mantashe competent.
Yes.
The court can't order them to be competent because they don't have that in their wheelhouse. That would be like me telling Bakabantu to solve the global climate crisis. You just don't have that. I don't have that ability, and neither do you. So if I tell you to do it, that's not going to make you do it.
Doesn't change anything.
Yeah. The matric exam period has gone about without significant glitches. So this is from our basic, and very basic is the word, education department. Over 700,000 matrics sat for exams in 2023, more than 8,000 exam centers worldwide. The department's minister, Angie Motshekga, can you believe she's still there, urged learners to be patient before results were issued. She said a lot was done to support learners to prepare for their exams. Like giving them the answers beforehand?
That was what I was going to say. Like like the way Angie Motshekga went, I think since Zuma era, 2007, she's held the same portfolio.
It's amazing.
And like, I love how she improves, right? But the only way she improves, she rigs the results.
And she just brings the standard down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like if I keep lowering the marks.
We need this year's matrix to look like they've improved on last year's. We'll just decrease the pass rate.
Like, because they have the actual matrix. They're like, oh, these kids are getting dumber.
And
oh,
they
let's just call them smarter.
They are observably getting dumber. Yes. And we have the lowest levels of numeracy and literacy on the continent.
Yeah,
there's a famous statistic now everybody bandies about.
No.
But it is called basic education for a reason. This is the kind of basic that will make you so basic in society that you won't be able to get anything but a menial job.
Yes.
So, well done on all that, ANC. As I said over the weekend, and we're going to start off first in a number of new shows. The first today is going to be Democracy 101. So we're going to look at why democracy is the system we have in South Africa, whether it is the best system, what you need to know about it, going back to basics. So when we say Democracy 101, it's like a crash course. And we're going to be joined by the IEC's Deputy Chief Electoral Officer, who's responsible for electoral operations, because these are the guys who make sure that the elections actually are legit.
Yeah, run, legit, ordered.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we don't talk to them, how do we know that it's even worth going to the polls? Because that's how a lot of people feel anyway. Why bother? So we want people to vote. We want people to take a stake in their own future. We want people to know that it is their decision and their choice that will make this country better or worse. We can see the results of making the wrong choice because you just have to look at the ANC. And we've pretty much spent the last 35 minutes talking about how terrible they are at everything. So we're going to ask the IEC to explain the elections to us, explain how the polls work, what you need to know about when you go to the elections, as if you'd never known. If you're an alien who just landed on planet Earth, we're going to take you through it step by step. hold your hand along the way so that we at the end of this have smarter people.
Yes.
Who can vote.
Exactly. Who understand what they're doing.
Right. Who can do something.
Yeah.
And then I see this story. You can buy an EFF gazebo today. You can visit the EFF's online store to make your purchase. They don't say how much it is, but I'll show you the graphic. Oh, they're 5,000 Rand each.
Oh.
Okay, so the EFF, the EFF are resorting. This is very, very cool. so the EFF, who obviously need money because they blew it all on their FNB extravaganza, right? Here's the picture. You can buy an EFF gazebo. I know that Congo Chris, for example, is desperate for one of these. Imagine putting one of these up for your braai this weekend.
Exactly. You know how to make your Christmas special? Buy an EFF gazebo.
I actually think it would be like ultimately a kind of trolling.
Yeah.
I would almost, if I had like spare cash to burn, I'd buy 10 of these and give them to my friends who I know hate the EFF. Yeah. Just as a gag gift.
I'll just go drop them off and like all the Buddha. That
Imagine you give it to like some right-wing friend of yours. Register to vote EFF, it says, but you can go to the EFF's online store, 5,000 Rand for gazebo. Because they're so desperate for money, they'll sell that.
Yeah, but like they announced the manifesto launch, so they have to fill up those seats, Gareth.
I mean, you could probably get one with your name on it for less.
Yeah, probably.
And why wouldn't you rather
walk down to Small Street and get one?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Oh my God.
Still support the cause.
It looks like the ANC is growing in the Eastern Cape. Go figure. Well, that province is finished. That province is finished. We should cut it off and let it float to Antarctica. I know it's where you're from, but sorry. It's a disaster. They bought that from China for 2K. Might only last until the elections.
Hopefully.
Say what you want. That's a good price for a 6x3 gazebo, says Congo. It's a good deal. And give the EFF my card details, says Mapelo. Never. Can you imagine the fraud? I mean, these are the guys who ripped off VBS.
Yeah, these are the guys who didn't know what credit cards they were using. They're like, oh, I'm just using a credit card. Yeah.
And trust me, if they're going to rip off grannies in Limpopo, put their life savings into VBS, they won't think twice about taking more than your
allegedly,
money.
Allegedly, Gareth. Allegedly.
I'm going to make counterfeit gazebos and sell them for $999 just to fuck with them, says Carl. Good. Do it. I'm going to go and buy that and go and live in Ventersburg or Orania. Says Tom.
People are just stoking the fire. Yo.
We've become expert trolls.
Yes.
That's what we've become. I love that. What a great story. And then Spotify are going to axe 1,500 workers to cut costs. Surprise. Again, one of these big tech companies that's just got way too many people doing nothing.
Yes.
So, and you know, as AI starts to improve and machines start to take over some of the more repetitive, boring tasks that humans are not necessary for, you're going to see this happening more and more. And then these people will have something to worry about, not climate change, because they'll actually have to find a job. So apparently they're getting rid of 17% of their workforce. And that's 1,500 odd people. Chief Executive Daniel Ek said he made the difficult decision. With economic growth slowing dramatically, they employ about 9,000 people. And he said substantial action to right-size our costs was needed. The tech company's been expanding worldwide as it seeks to reach 1 billion users by 2030. Currently has 601 million of them, up from 345 million at the end of 2020.
You know, all these tech companies that are like based on the subscription service type thing, Uber, all these companies that basically went to IPO with billions worth of debt, right?
Mm.
So these companies like Spotify, this is the only way they can justify an improvement year on year on year on year. This is what Disney Plus tried to do. You lay off the workers and then you offset that as profit, but it's not really happening.
You're not showing real growth.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can only affect the balance sheet in two ways. You're going to have more coming in or you can spend less.
Yes.
Right. So they're going for the second option because there's obviously not more coming in.
Exactly. And
apparently Disney lost 23 million subscribers since Elon Musk told
and it still
Bob
hasn't come
Iger
close.
To go and fuck himself.
Yeah, exactly. And it still hasn't come close to even breaking even to like in terms of the subscribers that they need.
You know, there was a time when Disney was like unassailable, right? They were such a powerful company. They were a juggernaut.
Yes.
And their share price was just going up and up and up. And they were buying Star Wars and they were buying all kinds of other franchises. And they were just printing money.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like the shine has completely come off Disney.
And it's not the tools, Gareth. Like what? Movies look better than they've ever done?
No, it's not the tools.
It's not the tools. It's the people at the helm.
They're not running it properly.
Exactly.
That's all you can say, right?
Because,
it's fascinating. It's fascinating. And then there's this story, which before we get to JJ, the mother of a man suspected of stabbing a German tourist to death near the Eiffel Tower in Paris reported concerns about her son weeks before the attack. And nobody listened. You know, when your mom is like,
kill the psycho.
Put this child in jail, and nobody listens. Anyway, two others, including a British man, were injured in the attack on Saturday. A 26-year-old French man was later arrested, and anti-terrorism prosecutors opened an investigation. France's interior minister said this was a failure in the alleged attacker's psychiatric treatment. Well, the part of the story they leave out is, guess what he was shouting while he was flailing around with a knife, stabbing people in his immediate environs? Guess what he was shouting?
Probably something anti-Semitic.
Allahu Akbar. Bah. Nobody talks about it. It's amazing how, like, he's telling you his motive. He may be a completely deranged lunatic, and by no means does he represent the average Muslim. Okay, obviously not. You have to say this because people are so dumb that they think that. This is not him being a normal, moderate, sensible, religious Muslim. This is him being a fanatical, nutcase kind of Muslim. But he tells you what his main motivator is. Because apparently he was very upset about what's going on in Gaza. Because there's all this noise on social media. So he felt, I better join in. And he's clearly a nutcase. So he goes out into the streets with his knife. And he wants you to know he's doing it for
Allah.
Allah and for Gaza.
Yes.
So when he does this, but of course in the news, you can go to every one of the sites reporting this story and you will find maybe 1 out of 10 that will mention that he shouted Allahu Akbar.
Yes. It's the only like religion that still exists, that still still believes in the holy war and believes that
jihad is a part it's a part of you know, this is the central tenet of kind of the genesis of the Muhammad story is that he was a warlord and there's no point in denying it. I'm not saying that, you know, all other religious leaders throughout history were all absolutely blank slates that had nothing nefarious or dodgy in their pasts, but the fact that this, let's just isolate this incident. It is material,
yes,
as the lawyers would say, that this is what his motivation was.
Yes.
So when people go, oh, wow.
It is the definition of being radicalized.
A guy just stabbed a guy. You're like, why?
Like, I don't know, but
was it for his phone? No. Was it because he doesn't know any French? I don't think so. Was it because he doesn't like the geraniums in the window boxes of a certain flat in Paris? No, he's telling you why he's doing it. So it's material. So news media, report it.
Yes.
Stop hiding the ball. It's important that people know when someone attacks someone in the city.
Especially
that,
when we do know what the reason.
This is a metropolitan city. Mm-hmm. Just the other day, there was a World Cup final in it. There are many tourists from all over the world who go there. It is incumbent upon you, as the police and as the media in France and in the world, to tell people why an attack happened. Then they can decide, well, I think I'll stay away from France. Or, okay, it's just one nutcase. Mm-hmm. But we need to know. Anyway, let's get to JJ. He's got some sensible things to tell us about what's going on in Africanalysis. Now, I suspect this may be our last Africanalysis for the year. So let's make a big fuss because we will be coming back with it next year. Johannesburg Business School are back and they want to tell you even more about all of their programs that are happening, and they really are doing an excellent job. You can find out more by visiting their page on cliffcentral.com, or go and check out, especially if you're looking or someone in your family is looking to study at JBS next year, go and see what they offer. It's really worthwhile. They've got some amazing lecturers, some amazing courses. And as business schools go, you know, people are doing their MBAs because it is a surefire way to have people take you seriously in the business world. You've got an MBA, and if you get one from JBS, you know you're getting a good quality MBA too. So go and take a look. But here is JJ Cornish, and the reason we talk to him is to find out what happens in Africa, our big and diverse and amazing continent. So JJ, how are you?
Bonjour, I'm immensely well, and I don't know why you suppose that I won't be here on the 19th? Is it because I wore that little crown of holly and danced with a champagne glass and made a fool of myself at your Christmas party? I'm over that.
You know, I saw you. You were holding court at the Christmas party. People were listening to you, telling stories. It was actually fascinating. We've got to do a full interview with you at some point because we only get to see you on this show, what, once every 2 weeks? And it's for 15 minutes. So I think next time, next year, we'll sit down and do a proper interview. You've had unbelievable experiences in your life that I feel like we need to hear some of those. So, Africanalysis, JJ, what do we got going on in Africa this week?
Am I talking to you? Am I talking to your little Christmas goblin? That's a Swedish goblin you have there.
Is it?
You know that. And they start, yes, I have two Swedish grandchildren. And suddenly out of nowhere, these two goblins appear at sort of time of Advent and their lives change. And, I don't know where they hide for the rest of the year, but once they come out, life, of course, with 18 degrees below zero,
yeah,
they need everything they can.
Right.
Poor little buggers. But that's a beautiful little thing you have. Now, you know, I'm talking about Sudan to start with, and it's rather sad. The United Nations political mission there, and the acronym is UNITAMS, which stands for the UN Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
It came in after the junta started fighting with the rapid support forces, leaving 25 million people in need of humanitarian aid, forcing 6 million people from their homes, killing tens of thousands, you know, terrible business. But United Nations can't be in an area if the authorities don't want them to be there. That's the way it works. So now the junta's not happy about them being there. They say, you've got to go. So UNITAM says, okay, we'll go. And it's going to take us 3 months to disengage. But don't for a moment suppose the UN is abandoning Sudan. We're there. And of course, they have had peacekeeping forces. That's something else entirely. That's done by the Security Council, determines to send them there. And they've had them in Darfur. They've had South African members of that peacekeeping force. And the situation in Darfur is absolutely dire. It was the world's worst humanitarian crisis. At the moment, of course, it's been eclipsed. But it's pretty sad what is happening. It's bearing the worst brunt of the fighting in Sudan. So we wonder what will happen, why the junta can't stand to have UNITAMS there, because, of course, it points to the fact that both the junta and the rapid support forces keep fighting because the reality is both of them think they can win. And they don't mind what they're doing this to the Sudanese people. They'll keep fighting, and somebody's got to be able to stop it.
JJ, we're doing a new show later on this morning called Democracy 101, and we're going to look at definitional things like what is democracy, what is a republic. But you use the word junta, and I can see lots of people go, we know what that is. But it's important also for us to just kind of explain what these things are. There's been a very famous junta in Aung San Suu Kyi's, what is it called, Myanmar.
Yeah.
But in Sudan, it's basically any military group which seizes power, yeah, right?
Indeed, yes. It's also called that a coup,
yes,
which is also
yes.
called a putsch.
A
and
putsch,
we're going to talk
yes.
about a putsch later. But the thing is, the junta is then the military authority that rules the country.
Mm.
And, you know, they have them all over Africa at the moment, sadly, with the return of the coups in Africa. As I say, we're going to talk about it in a few minutes. The thing is, though, you don't want juntas. You know, with your democracy, I wish I'd known about it because, you know, I've observed elections in 13 African countries.
Right.
And, you know, it's all very well to talk about elections, but to have your elections come around every 5 years is very, very important to a democracy. But having elections doesn't make it a democracy.
Yes.
I mean, look at Zimbabwe, for example, and look at other countries. Look at Sudan has regular elections. Many of them do have. So that is important. But to it's the operation of the system, that very imperfect system as it happens, in between the elections that really makes a country a democracy. And I'm sure your experts are going to explain that to the viewers and listeners.
Yeah, I mean, we'd be talking to the deputy chief executive of the IEC, who's really, I think, the person who we need to speak to about our elections and how they work. But let's return to Africa for a second, because there's a newly formed alliance of Sahel states. Now, you've explained to us what the Sahel is. It's actually a region. And who are these who are these states, and what are they trying to do? What's their purpose?
Extends across the band of the belt of Africa above the desert, above the Sahara Desert.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Sahara Desert, of course, divides Africa into the, you know, sub-Saharan and North Saharan Africa. It's not the biggest divide in Africa. The biggest divide in Africa is the language divide between Francophone and Anglophone Africans, in my experience.
Yes.
But there were five members, G5, the group of Sahel states, where the jihadis are very, very, very active. Mm. And they were Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, and then Chad and Mauritania were members of this G5, and it was very much set up too by the French, who operated and believed that the answer to the jihadis was a military solution, which of course it isn't. It's it's a political and social solution. Why are people becoming jihadis to die, and why are they prepared to die? Because fighting in as a jihadi, fighting in the is the only form of job that these people can get, and life is so desperate that they're prepared to die to change it. Anyway, in three of those countries, sadly, Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso, there have been coups, and the regional grouping ECOWAS, Economic Community of West African States, said in the last one with Niger, unless you restore constitutionality, we will come in and do it for you with a military solution. So these three banded together, and Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, and formed this Sahel states alliance of Sahel states, and said, an injury to one will be an injury to all. You come in here militarily and see what happens. Of course, ECOWAS would love to do it, Nigeria being the leader there, one of the leading countries. But to mount a military operation like that costs a huge amount of money. Right. In fact, Gareth, unless you have the United Nations backing you, you can't afford to do it. And that's why ECOWAS hasn't done it. So these three have now withdrawn from the G5, which they see as sort of Western-oriented, and formed this alliance. And it's they were unable, the G5 was unable to stop the jihadis. And it appears, I fear, that this new alliance is not going to be able to do it either. And they've turned to people like the Wagner Group and to Russia, and they haven't managed to turn things around either. The point is, you've got to look into your own heart and see why. Why are the people fighting? Why are they doing this? Why are they prepared to die to overthrow us? Something has got to be wrong with this society, and that's what they've got to look at. And even though some of them might be nominal democracies in terms of votes, when the juntas take over, that's the end of it. And of course, they become red carded from the African Union. The African Union has, and it's one of its basic tenets, that if a country has an unconstitutional change of government, in other words, an overthrow of a democratically elected government, then it's red carded. It can't vote and it can't take part in debates at the United Nations. So it makes a bit of a mess of that very, very troubled region in Africa.
JJ, again, this is an area that's hardly known for its peace and stability. But is this actually going to feasibly hold these putschists at bay?
They're ruling now, and some of them have said, elections are not a priority. We've got to restore order.
Yeah.
And the people who've had to endure the fighting you know, from these terrorists, effectively, yeah. are saying, well, you know, the government was unable, and that's why Burkina Faso had not one but two coups. The government was unable to restore order. We've got to, you know, let's hope the military can do so. And that is why, for example, the tailors in these areas are making Russian flags and making a fortune selling Russian flags. People go to the street waving Russian flags. It's an act of sheer desperation. Wow. And that's the tragedy of it. But the governments, I mean, they've got no chance of stopping the jihad because the attacks continue. And these soldiers, now part of a ruling junta, are dying in these attacks. So it hasn't changed the situation. It hasn't changed or brought stability, which is what the people are craving.
Let's just turn our attention quickly to Central and East Africa. I mean, Rwanda it continues to be held up by some as a paragon of kind of how Africa could operate if it had just a little more authoritarianism and some consequences for people doing things. But other people are also very interested in this deal that Paul Kagame has with the British, which is fascinating because they're trying to, the Brits are trying to what, export people they don't want yes. to Rwanda. Rwanda yes. gets money in return. They're trying to solve each other's very awkward problems in this way. How's that deal going? And what's happened with Paul Kagame's big plan with Rishi Sunak recently?
Well, the headline news is, of course, the death of the former Prime Minister, Faustin Twagiramungu.
Uh-huh.
I like to say these Rwandan names because you've got to practice them. They're not as difficult as the Madagascan names. But Twagiramungu, he died in exile in Belgium,
yes.
and he was briefly the prime minister. He was a player though, and he took advantage of the feelings after the genocide and was there. But right. he had fallen out with Paul Kagame, which is not a smart thing to do in Rwanda. And if you have, then it's a good idea to find somewhere else to live.
Yeah.
Possibly not South Africa, because he's chased people into South Africa and killed them. Yeah? Sure. But anyway, Twagiramungu, he opposed Kagame in the elections
yeah.
in 2003. And won a massive 3.62% of the vote. Paul Kagame doesn't like to have anything less than about 95%. You know,
exactly.
So he was destined. He was destined for deadly things if he didn't bugger off, which he did. But what is happening with this deal now? Rishi Sunak's trying to look like a tough guy.
Yeah.
The courts have said, we can't send the asylum seekers to Rwanda because there's a real danger that Paul Kagame will send them back to their country of origin, which is back to certain death. It's costing the British taxpayer, would cost more than 4 million rand per asylum seeker to send them to Rwanda, the 6,400 miles away from his trouble. He has promised we will stop the boats. These are little boats risking the lives of their passengers to cross the channel. Now, the numbers have increased, even though he has promised to stop it. And the British courts ruled the asylum-seeking exile absolutely illegal. So now he's gone and said, okay, I am now making a treaty with the Rwandans. I don't know what the terms of that treaty are, but maybe there will be in it a promise not to send them back to the country of origin. But in pursuit of that treaty and in honoring that treaty, I'm going to satisfy the courts that their misgivings about what could happen are incorrect. Now, happily, for those who are really concerned for these asylum seekers, and human rights groups and others definitely are, Rishi Sunak stands no chance of winning the next election. So it will be the Labour government that determines what happens. But in order to look like a tough guy, and Rishi Sunak trying to look like a tough guy is, I don't know, it's like me trying to look like a possible comrades winner standing next to Bruce Fordyce
yeah.
at the start of that race, you know?
Right.
Or maybe dropping one sleeve of my singlet so that I look like Josiah Stangwere or something. It's just so silly. It's laughable. And happily laughable because, you know, imagine being that desperate to leave your country and seek succor in the United Kingdom, and then suddenly be put on a plane and sent to some place like Rwanda, which nobody would want to happen. So that's a little drama that's going to play out until the election next year. I don't know. He's had to get rid of his cabinet minister, who just turned out to be, you know, a crazy mouthed woman.
Tell me about her. I also want to hear about her. She sounds exciting. Well, tell us. We can't wait to hear about her.
Well, she of course was the one that was saying that living rough and sleeping rough in England was in fact a lifestyle choice. She was booted out once before and then came back.
You mean Suella Braverman?
Yes, Suella. Yes. It's not really her surname. She had another surname, which she changed that, I think, for political reasons. Now, she's now the nasty person telling everybody how gutless Rishi Sunak was. That's the payment you get for bringing her back into government. But she happily, I mean, hoping she's going to disappear along with him at the next election. But she was the person who championed the Rwanda exile program. And I don't think she would have bothered with the court decision. She would have tried to ride roughshod over that one. Happily, he's got rid of her.
Okay. Well, I mean, it sounds to me like things are falling apart in Britain, and that's not even Rishi Sunak's fault necessarily. But I mean, it just sounds to me like it's chaos over there at the moment. They don't know what to do with all these refugees, right?
Ask your democracy expert if Britain is a real democracy at this time.
That's a good question.
How many prime ministers have they had? Ask him if the United States is a real democracy at this time. You've got a very interesting set of questions ahead of you.
Right, exactly. All right, well, thank you so much, JJ. Good to talk to you as always, and very useful information about what's happening in our immediate environs. And African Analysis is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. We'll see you for the last episode on the 19th.
On the 19th, most certainly.
Very good. Thank you, JJ.
Thank you, JJ.
Lovely. JJ Cornish. That brings us to 7 o'clock. We're going to take a quick break. And then we've got more for you, including our first episode this morning of Democracy 101. Don't go away. CliffCentral.com.